Derek, you ever have one of those TV shows where you're looking forward to it, but you know something really bad's going to happen?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of our listeners may feel like that about today's episode.
Go on.
Well, okay, our first guest that we spoke to a little bit earlier, Carolina Hurricanes legend and color commentator for pre- and post-game for the San Jose Sharks, Brett Hedekin. Never been on the podcast. Somebody you really, really look forward to listening to.
Absolutely. And spoiler alert, we did not ask him about the majesty of his playoff beard.
It's majestic. I don't know if you need to say much more than that.
Okay, fair enough.
But then we also had another interview. News and Observer legend has been around seemingly forever, covering this team initially as the beat guy and now as a opinionist over at the News and Observer. Luke DeCox here.
Okay, that was another good discussion.
A great discussion, but sometimes his level of candor is not as well received with Caniac Nation as maybe it should be, or maybe shouldn't be. I don't know. We'll let the listeners make that choice. I believe Luke brought it up the last time he was here. We had a conversation about Alex Semin.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Okay. Kind of threw us off with that one.
Yeah. So
I wasn't ready. I wasn't in the right frame of mind. So folks, when you get to that interview, don't immediately turn to the next podcast when you hear those two words come out of his mouth. I promise the discussion does not go down that road.
Yeah, no, it was a great conversation today with Luke. We talked with him about ownership. We talked with him about...
Mike, happy Dundon Day to you.
Oh my gosh, Derek, I am so sorry. Happy Dundon Day, and happy Dundon Day to you, all of our listeners, because whatever day you're listening to this podcast, it is a happy Dundon Day.
Oh, happy Dundon Day.
Happy Dundon Day. So we've got that. We've got your cheat mail. We've got the bottle mix beer review. We're in the middle of like a crazy homestand. I feel like this is the first time I've not been sleeping at PNC Arena for the last week.
You did get your mail forwarded there, right? I got my my W-2 delivered to the arena. I just picked it up at guest services.
Yeah, it's in the middle of a long, long homestand. I mean, 4 games in 6 nights, all at home.
5-8.
Whew.
Yeah. So that may explain the little bit of scratchiness that is in both of our voices today.
Yes. Well, that and that sweet, delicious beer.
Yeah. So I promise we're not trying to go full Jade and seduce the listeners with our dulcet tones this morning. It's just we've been making a bit of noise this week. And as others have pointed out, we haven't been doing it from 328. But rest assured, we'll be back.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. Lots of things to cover on today's podcast. Thank you guys for listening. But Derek, without further ado.
Yeah, ma'am.
Hit that damn X button.
Oh, absolutely.
Welcome to the Cheaters Never Win podcast, another fine product of Section328.com. Here you'll find all the Hurricanes hockey talk, adult beverage reviews, and snark a growing body needs. Follow us on Twitter at Section_328. Respect the underscore. And now back to Derek and Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Voice, and thank you, Hayes Permar, who was sitting third row on Tuesday night, for still allowing us to be a member of the Sports Channel 8 podcast network.
Hey.
And Derek, I wanted to go ahead and jump in. Two great interviews, but I want to talk a little bit about what's been a very interesting week in Caniacville.
Yeah.
In the fact that Tom Dundon said, okay, everybody, come on down. I'm making changes.
Yep.
Lots of things that have happened this week. So, you know, we Luke will touch on a few of these, but I think the one that affected Caniacs most and was probably the biggest point of interest or discussion was the fact on Tuesday night against Ottawa, mm-hmm. they were expecting somewhere between 8 and 10,000 in the building. And Tom said, I'm creating a home ice advantage. I want the team and the arena to be more raucous. Therefore, I am going to offer anyone who is not currently seated in the lower level an upgrade to a lower level ticket in an effort to try to create a home ice advantage and bring a buzz into the building.
Not just lower level. Some folks got upgraded to club level, but either way, they were closer to the ice and it was fantastic. You and I were texting about this as, you know, the news was coming down from media and the team themselves. And it was like, Mike, we're excited to get to the game for a Tuesday night tilt against Ottawa. I don't know the last time that happened. There were still some empty seats because I think attendance probably ended up being 10, 11,000 or so.
Right around 11, yeah.
But I could only imagine how dead that building would have been had this not happened. You wrote a nice piece that got picked up by NBC Sports. About the change and what was going to happen that night. I threw a little follow-up out there the next day that talked about what I thought was good, nearly everything, what I thought could be improved. There was one issue with buying extra tickets to that game for season ticket holders that, you know, I know the team has been made aware of. And one, I hope they don't have to do this again, but if they choose to, where they can improve this. And I think overall it was good. There were some concerns from some season ticket holders about, other folks are getting value that we're not getting. But I don't know anything like concrete, but I would be shocked if season ticket holders aren't going to be taken care of in some way or incentivized to renew their season tickets. There's a lot of other discussions about the word devalue that I don't know that I really want to get into, but let's all go. Let's all have some fun. You're not being forgotten by the team. I could almost guarantee you that.
Yeah, I can say without a doubt, the focus has been, let's figure out a way to fill the building and make the building better. Mm-hmm. Season ticket holders, whether they be upstairs or downstairs, at this point are locked into a package, are locked into a rate, and are kind of locked into what you're going to get. You may get some additional things here and there, but at this point, we made the decision, at least this is how I'm viewing it. I know other season ticket holders may view it differently. I committed to a package of tickets under the Peter Karmanos regime. I knew what I was getting when I laid down my money and I got those tickets, and I did not expect anything additional out of that.
And you felt it was a fine value, or else you would not have paid that money.
I felt it was what I had to do, which
right,
is
right. But I mean, you're making
the last
that...
9 seasons. It's kind of what I felt like. But I think the follow up there is when that next commitment is made, that commitment is going to be made to the Dundon regime, and I think that there is going to be a higher level of expectations, correct or incorrect, not only necessarily on the product of what's being delivered on the ice, but I think the value of what's going to be delivered and the attention to detail. Maybe that's the more important thing. I think the attention to detail, little things like, you know, everybody who's a season ticket member, we get these nice little pins that was a 20th anniversary pin, and it's really nice. And you know, we who have 3 season tickets got one pin, huh? You know, we got 3 people in our house, and everybody has jerseys, and I get one.
You have a timeshare, Mike, so you get to wear it on Monday through Wednesday games. Your wife gets to wear it Thursday through Saturday, and if there's a Sunday game, your son gets to wear it.
Well, and you know, even I know you share tickets with the grand poobah of Section 328. Maybe we'll call him Jack Spencer, who has like 8 or 10 people who are underneath him and a spreadsheet and all of that stuff. But again, one grand. Things. I mean, it's little things like that, plus the value, the additional things. A couple of things I did like out of what Tom Dundon did this week. I don't know if you saw the note he had written up on the board in the locker room. It's at 2:45. There is going to be a fan tunnel entry onto the ice, not 4 times a season, every game.
Yep.
For life.
He went full NWO on that one.
Yeah. I mean, can we just get a GIF of or a GIF, whatever you know you want to say, of Tom Dundon just going full Hogan for life?
I like it.
I love
it. Yeah, let's do that.
Hey, when Tom's on this podcast, and he's going to do it here from the 328 Worldwide headquarters, you know, because that's how he rolls, you know, Windbreaker hat for life GIF. Oh, God, make it happen, Tommy D.
Okay,
let's do that. Other things, you know, so that's a nice little change. The fact of, you know, do we even want to talk Whalers gear?
We can.
Do we want to talk the fact that for the second time ever...
And now 3... I don't know if they played it again last night.
I don't recall hearing it last night, but Brass Bonanza has been played in the arena, which was basically expressly foreboden within the arena. Was not allowed to be played at all. So we are at least acknowledging our history. Some folks feel good about it. Some folks feel like, what's the big deal? It's been 20 years, but I think it is a nod to the history. I also think it's a smart money move by Tom Dundon because basically it's like printing cash.
That's the way I look at it because I don't have any fondness for the Whalers, the team, because that was before I became a hockey fan. What I do have a fondness for was playing NHL 94. The Whale logo is just a great logo. It's pretty to look at. It's got good negative space, all those things. The colors are fun. It's just a good time. And for me, what I really like is the Brass Bonanza. Yes, I associate it with the Wailers because it was their fight song, so to speak. But it's just a fun song. It reminds me of playing the NHL video games as a kid. And it's just that old-time hockey and not the way you just print it on a shirt to mean whatever the hell you want it to mean. But it's like, no, this is just fun. You saw everybody getting up and dancing to Brass Bonanza. It was a hell of a lot of fun the other night.
Yeah, lots of fun. Again, I think re-energizing the building, re-energizing this organization, and I think that is what Mr. Dundon has really done a great job of focusing on. And I think the other big news coming out of this week is Tom Dundon attended the Centennial Authority meeting and in no uncertain words said, I need a scoreboard update and I need it ASAP. Mm-hmm. And I want that scoreboard to go from blue line to blue line.
Which isn't as absurd as it sounds at first, but that's still a big scoreboard.
When you look at what we've got, though, Derek, I think what he's talking about, and again, I've seen it in places like Tampa and that type of thing, it's about 4x what we have today.
Is it that much bigger?
Because not only is it, it's wider and taller. So you think about
I mean, good Lord, what we have right now is tall.
But imagine what we have, the height of that being one screen.
We've got like the Baconator right now. Yeah, it's really tall, but it's not that great.
Wow.
It's got a lot of layers to it.
Wow. Don't let at Wendy's hear you doing that because they are vicious on Twitter.
That they are. You know what? Wendy's, at us.
Ooh. Ooh. Oh, Derek going full social media coordinator and calling out the bully in the schoolyard that is Wendy's. I think it's a good week. On the ice, two game, you know, couple of wins, misstep. I mean, we both expected it last night. The Canes were going to come out.
Oh, yeah.
We were going to have a flat game in the middle of all of this. Fortunately, I think I would rather had a flat game against San Jose than Detroit. We knew one of the games this weekend, we were probably going to come out flat, particularly after a couple of wins. So we're just going to come out against San Jose on Sunday and just bring it. Yes, sir. Who's holding your hand on an audio-only podcast?
I have a thought for a key to victory.
Please.
Score more than 2 goals.
That could be beneficial.
Yeah.
Problem is we're playing against a team who's got I believe both goaltenders are both above a 9.15 and both goalies are under 2.5.
Screw it. Score 3.
Score 4.
Score 9. I don't care. Just score more than 2, damn it.
Yeah, it's been 5-on-5 sledding has been a little bit tough from an offensive perspective.
That's putting it lightly.
Derek, you and I could talk about all of this, but we've been avoiding it long enough. We should go to our guest who's going to know Sunday's game probably better than we do, probably.
Probably.
Derek, I don't know if I could be more excited. One of my favorite Hurricanes of all time, and I think John Forslund has said this is his former Cane who has transitioned to media role probably better than any we've ever seen. On the line with us today, Hurricane great and pre- and post-color analyst for the San Jose Sharks, Brett Hedekin. Brett, thanks for taking some time out of your morning, sir, to join us here on Cheaters Never Win. How's the East Coast treating you guys?
Well, it's great. We, you know, we've had a good road trip so far, I think, with the Sharks right now. And we just got in late last night after our game against Columbus. I thought it was a solid performance by the Sharks. They beat Columbus 3-1. And, you know, obviously the other games, they had one loss and one tie in over, loss in overtime, and then the other was a loss. So, you know, 1-1-1 is something that I think they'll continue to put points up on the board and be happy about it. All in all, they'll take it.
Yeah, no, we here in Caniac land definitely appreciate you guys taking 2 points and not letting that game with Columbus get to overtime last night, but really been getting some really solid goaltending. And, you know, we've heard here a little bit about the conversation of, is there a goaltending controversy in San Jose with between Dell and Jones? Jones being the guy that everybody kind of looks to as the guy who you guys want to have ready for the playoffs, but Dell's been playing so well. What's your take on kind of the goaltending in San Jose, and who should we expect to see in net tomorrow night?
Well, I think you're going to see Martin Jones, and I'm not going to take anything away from Aaron Dell and what he has done this season, but, you know, our number one goaltender is Martin Jones, and, you know, I think Pete DeBoer has been a terrific coach to watch, by the way. I've really enjoyed watching this guy and what he does behind the bench. And, you know, talking about having a coach that has his finger on the pulse of his group and his team, his players, is, you know, he has a tough performance, Martin Jones does, against the Penguins, and they lose 5-2. And I'll be honest, I thought the Penguins were completely outplayed in that game. I thought the Sharks completely outplayed them. And for them to lose 5-2, it's really one of those things where four of the five, the fifth one was an empty netter, but the four were really turnovers by the San Jose Sharks that just handed the game over to Pittsburgh. And those nights will happen. Martin Jones probably didn't have his strongest night, and it was going to be a back-to-back situation the next night in Detroit. And I really thought, you know, we'd see Aaron Dell with the way he's played all season, but no, Pete DeBoer comes out and says, no, you're going back in, and you're going to play against Detroit. And I'm going to tell you what, I think it was one of those things and situations where he says, you know what, I got your back, I believe in you, I want you back in that net because I believe in you. And that's exactly what Jones did. He went in there and stopped everything that was thrown at him against the Red Wings and played a really solid game. And yes, they lost in a shootout, but I think that momentum carried over into the Columbus game last night, and he just played one solid heck of a game. And you know, I think when you look at controversy, it's never bad to have two goaltenders. As you guys know well, you need guys and you need every player. We saw that in 2006 in the Stanley Cup Finals in the run with Cam Ward stepping in there after game two for game three and then just basically ran the table. So you need every player on that bench, and every player on that bench needs to feel important. And Dell has done an important role this year, but Martin Jones is the number one guy.
Brett, I got to be honest, it gets a little hard to follow what you say after you talk about the Canes winning the Stanley Cup. I just get a little bit distracted and caught up in the nostalgia of that. But wanted to say with San Jose now, obviously one of the big stories is Joe Thornton on the shelf for a number of weeks yet to be determined with that knee injury. Obviously, it's kind of nice for San Jose that you've had multiple guys in a leadership role. But from an on-ice performance standpoint, are there any young guys who might be getting some additional minutes that Canes fans should keep an eye on tomorrow?
Yeah, I think Chris Tierney is a player that has emerged this year. He's got 12 goals on the year. He's got 11 assists. And I think he's a guy that, you know, that was kind of challenged last year at the end of the year by Pete DeBoer. Him and Jonas Donskoy saying, hey, you guys got to both be better. And I think they've both come back with a vengeance this year, playing some solid hockey. And Chris Tierney has taken it to the next level. And I think when you see a young centerman, or even a young forward for that matter, and there's others that have, you know, come into this team as well, Timo Meier, Kevin LeBanc, these players, as they get into the NHL, they realize they got to put in more strength. They got to put more, you know, body weight on, if you will, to handle the rigors of the NHL. And I think, you know, Tierney and Donskoy both did that over the course of the summer, came back, they looked stronger. And now you're seeing them make plays late in shifts. And I think that, you know, really speaks to players that have put time in, the ones that are out there for 40, 50 seconds, and all of a sudden they still got another gear, or they still got gas in the tank to make something happen. And that's when they become a real true pro. So keep an eye on Chris Tierney. I'd say keep an eye on Jonas Donskoy. And Timo Meier, for me, is a guy that's really emerged, kind of a power forward that, you know, the first five games of the year, I didn't really think this kid could even play in the National Hockey League. And then all of a sudden, the next five, you start to scratch your head. And by game 15, you're going, wow, I really see something here. And then now he's really been a factor every night. So it's fun to watch Timo Meier as well.
Yeah, lots of great, you know, just kind of, it's fun to watch the Sharks team reload after losing somebody like Patrick Marleau. And, you know, after the year that Brett Burns have, I'm sitting here looking at stats, and folks have talked about, you know, how Burnsy had kind of a slow start to the season. And I'm going, he's got 42 points in 51 games, and Pickles is quite possibly one of my favorite non-Canes ever. What is there a key that the Carolina Hurricanes might be able to do to try to slow down the back end of this San Jose Sharks team?
Well, you know, I agree. I think Burns got off to a slow start, but you're right. He's come on guns a-blazing. And, you know, I think, you know, there's a time where he started to kind of just settle in and make that first breakout pass. And I think as defensemen, I mean, you saw us, and again, I don't want to get you all nostalgic again talking about the Stanley Cup 2016, but, you know, we were a group of dogs back there. I don't think anybody was, you know, per se a number one guy. And everybody always talks about, well, the Carolina Hurricanes didn't have a number one guy. Well, I'll tell you what we did have. We probably had seven number twos, All right. And I think when you got seven number twos that all move the puck efficiently from the back end, make that first breakout pass with authority and on the tape, and play physical in your own end, it's hard to play against. And you break that puck out, and when you get up the play as well, I think that was one of the things Pete LaViolette stressed as much as he could, was continue to get yourself up on the play. So I think when you've got a defense core like you guys have, a young group of guys that learn how to play, make the first breakout pass, be physical in your own end, be hard to play against, and then get yourself up in the play, boy, you can generate some offense from that back end. And you're seeing that with Vlasic, who's really committed now to doing a lot more of that, jumping up in the play this year. And obviously Brent Burns is, you know, once he navigates out of the defensive zone, which some nights can be a little bit of a chore, because he likes to maybe do a little bit too much. But that's some of the great things that Brent Burns does. He's got that, you know, want to do more. And sometimes, you know, less is more in the defensive zone. But once you get him out of the off the defensive zone, you get him in the offensive zone, boy, this guy's lethal. And, you know, it's hard to shut him down throughout the course of 60 minutes, but you got to try to get in his shot lane, which is never easy to do.
You know, I don't know if you heard that sound in the background as you were talking about that 2016, but that was actually Mike Commodore somewhere cracking two cold beers, being referred to as a number two defenseman.
Well, I'll tell you what, he played great, didn't he? Mike Commodore, he was my partner, and there's a reason why him and I were on the ice with, you know, a minute to go in the game with a 2-1 lead, and the goalie pulled, and, you know, our chance to ice it. I mean, he was out there with me, and we ended up getting that empty net goal by Justin Williams and Eric Staal, and, you know, that's I had a lot of pride playing with Mike Commodore, and we were great together.
It was certainly a lot of fun, and Brett, obviously, Canes fans listening to this know you from your run here with Carolina, and this is the Hurricanes' 20th season in the area, and they're doing the countdown of the top 20 Canes moments. Obviously, there's a clear-cut number one, hoisting the chalice, Game 7 at home. That's obvious, but if you could point to maybe another moment that people might not guess as one of your favorite Hurricanes moments, where would you go with that?
Boy, you know, I think I can come back to the very first day I was a Carolina Hurricane, and I walked into the locker room, and Paul Maurice, who also great coach, loved the guy, pulled me in his office and sat me down. And, you know, the night before, and I was playing for the Florida Panthers, I was a -3. And at the end of the night, I'm sitting in the locker room in Florida thinking to myself, God, I had a great game tonight and I got nothing to show for it but a -3. I mean, you know, one of those ones you just scratch your head and you say, you know what, you pick up the pieces and you come back the next day, put your skates on and get back to work, because, you know, you had a good night, but it's just nothing to show for it. And sure enough, I get traded and I end up in Carolina the next day. And I'm in that office with Paul Maurice. And, you know, he says, Brett, I'm going to tell you right now, he goes, I think you're underrated for what you do defensively. He goes, I love the way you skate. I love the way you play defense. And I love the way you make that first breakout pass. I know you're, he goes, I know you were a -3 last night. He goes, but I think you played great. And it was like, are you kidding me? And I kind of thought to myself, I kind of looked up into the sky thinking, did the clouds just part and the sun shine down on me? Because here's a guy that actually understands what I can bring to a team and he appreciates it. And I think from that moment on, I realized that I was in the right place and to do what I do, that I was going to be appreciated for what I can do. And I think from that moment on, you know, two Stanley Cups in 6 years we ran into, and we won on that one in 06. You know, those are all a culmination of the culture that was created, not only from Paul Maurice, but extended with, you know, Peter LaViolette. And most importantly, the culture that we had among the group of men in that room. So I don't think it's really, you know, one moment. Yeah, the one moment of hoisting, you know, Lord Stanley Cup is will never, you know, you can never top that. But I think the moments in between and the first moment of walking in to be a Carolina Hurricane was a great moment as well. And I'll tell you, I just always look back at Carolina days with a smile.
You know, Brett, you may not know this, you actually involved one of my favorite Hurricane moments as well. Obviously, lifting Lord Stanley's Cup is top on my list. But back in the day, I was DJing my way kind of through college and post-college. And I've told this story to a couple of folks. I was lucky enough that Nina at Nina's restaurant asked me to DJ a New Year's Eve party for her 1 year. And who shows up but Brett and Christy? Brett, can I ask you where does the world's greatest Michael Jackson impression come from? And why don't we see it on TV every single night? Because I for folks who are out there, I mean, there was a few Canes players there, but you literally, between you and Sean Hill, you guys brought the room down that night. Sean maybe in different ways than you, but your dance routines was great. So, I mean, is that an impact of having an Olympic figure skating champion wife, or where did this come from?
That's great stuff. Yeah, I would say that Michael Jackson and Billie Jean, or any basically Michael Jackson song that comes on, is it brings out the worst in me. I'll tell you that right now. It's definitely, you know, I think when it comes on, everybody just seems to look my way thinking, oh, here he goes. It's like Batman going, you know, boy. Yeah, just, you know, I don't know. I think the rhythm flows through my veins somewhere, and I love music and obviously love guitar and playing music, and it's just been one of those things I've always enjoyed. And who doesn't like a good beat, right?
No, absolutely. and who doesn't love them some great Brett Hedick? And Brett, we cannot say thank you enough for taking a few minutes out of your morning after a late flight in last night to join us here on the Cheaters Never Win podcast. An absolute pleasure, sir. We love watching you on the pre and post game for all of the coverage with the San Jose Sharks. And we look forward to watching your club in the playoffs. And we hope we're busy watching some East Coast playoff games here as well. Ladies and gentlemen, he is at Brett Hedick over on the Twitters. Follow him. Great information around everything San Jose Sharks, and we look forward to seeing you at the rink tomorrow night, Brett.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me. Appreciate it.
Take care, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Derek, quickly, name three classier individuals than Brett Hedick and go.
Oh.
You can't, because he's that good. One of my favorites of all time.
Absolutely.
I mean, slick skating, as you alluded to earlier, majestic playoff beard.
Oh, yeah, that was just like a void of hair.
Oh,
yeah.
It's a term I haven't heard in a while.
Him and Eric Cole just had the two best playoff beards, in my opinion.
Yeah, those guys rocked it. Again, Brett really kind of setting the stage for tomorrow night's game against the San Jose Sharks. Tough team coming in here. I mean, Burnsy, yeah. Pickles, Donskoy. Who'd ever thought Jonas Donskoy was going to be the world beater that he is?
They still have Joe Pavelski.
Joe Pa has not been playing great.
Please don't call him Joe Pa.
Oh, why? No.
Yeah,
no. He will always, Joe Pavelski will be Joe Pa, and he will be Captain America to me, and you will leave it as such.
Fair enough.
I can't wait till Joe and the rest of the America team goes over there to Pyongyang and brings,
No, that's not happening.
Is that not a thing this year?
Nope.
Okay.
No, it's not. What is a thing, and I know normally we talk about these at the end of the podcast, but because they're brand new, and in the spirit of Happy Dundon Day.
Happy Dundon Day.
People have asked, and we've answered. We now have, if you go to the 328 store, section328.com/store, you will see now we have several of our options available in youth sizes. So if you have a youth in your home that is a Carolina Hurricanes fan, or know a youth in someone else's home.
Or if you have two and you refer to them as utes.
I'm sorry, youths?
No, utes.
I don't.
These two utes.
You mean youths?
No, utes. Go ahead.
Those are now available in the store, so you can get our lovely merch in kids' sizes. There's also new hoodies, new sweatshirts, and a couple new designs there. So check it out at the Section 328 store. We certainly do appreciate that.
We do. We do. We appreciate all of you who buy the merch, who wear the merch, our loyal Patreon fans and all of that. So
and the folks who were down at the All-Star game in Tampa sending us pictures of wearing the 328 merch at the All-Star festivities.
Could not have been more proud.
That was awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. So, Derek, let's go. Speaking of Happy Dundon Day, let's go to Luke and see what his take is on what Mr. Dundon is doing for the Triangle. And welcome back. It's been a long time since we've had the News and Observer's very own Luke DeCock on Cheaters Never Win. Luke, welcome back, sir. How you been?
I'm good. We're not talking about Alexander Semin this time, are we?
No, actually. At least I hope not.
Thank God.
I mean, we can create a 10-minute AMA. And, no? Okay. All right. Good. We won't talk about him.
I remember the last time I was on with you guys, I remember a lengthy discussion about that because that was really the biggest issue at the time. And look at all the other things we have to talk about now.
You know, the first thing I want to talk about is that shiny
new thing that we have here in Raleigh. I'd be remiss, Luke, if I did not wish you a very happy Dundon Day. Luke, Tom Dundon has come to Raleigh and reinvigorated this franchise unlike anything we've seen in the last 10 years. As someone who has been with this team for seemingly forever on the press side, can you give us your just initial gut reaction on the reaction inside 1400 Edwards Mill Road to the new ownership?
Well, I think there's a couple things going on there, and really nothing, this is not a reflection on Tom. And anyway, I think anyone who bought the team and had any energy and any sense of you know, sort of drive or ambition was going to have the same effect on the fan base. You know, if it had been Chuck Greenberg, if it had been someone else, just because, you know, the absentee ownership for two decades under Peter Carmona, and especially the last 10, you know, there's just so much stagnation, so much low-hanging fruit to pick. These are all things, a lot of things that Dundon has done are things any of us would have wanted to do if we bought the team. So I think, you know, part of why everyone feels so good about this is just because it's nice to, in my case, cover. It's nice for in fan base to root for a team where you feel like the owner cares. And I think that's been part of the biggest thing is, you know, other teams, it's like this every day. If you have an owner who's committed and engaged and involved, Hurricanes fans, you know, it's like they've been locked in the basement for 20 years. This is what it's like for the rest of the world, for the most part. You know, this is what it's like when you have an Illich or a Jeff Vinnick or, you know, any of these guys. So to a certain extent, it's not, part of this isn't about Dundon. It's just about having an owner who's engaged and committed and wants to make things better, as opposed to just leave things the way they are and squeeze every nickel out of the 7,000 people who show up every day.
Yeah, now, I all know that you said, mentioned the name Vinnick, and you know, we've been jealous of the fan experience that Tampa Bay gets for years and what the benefits their season ticket holders have, so we certainly hope that he can be our Vinnick. Have you been surprised at how quickly some of these changes, whether it's Tuesday night saying pack the lower bowl or Thursday night there's Whalers gear on sale at the Eye?
Yeah.
Have you been surprised how quickly these things have come about?
Yeah, and that I think is when you can say, okay, so what's different about Tom Dundon? That I think is different, is the pace at which he wants to and is trying to do these things is he really doesn't care what anyone else thinks. If he wants to try something, he's going to do it. He doesn't care how uncomfortable it makes people who have been working here for a long time feel. He doesn't care if fans necessarily think it's a good idea or not. If he thinks it's a good idea, he's going to try it. And obviously there's pluses and minuses to that, but on the whole, you know, everyone, these are all, everything he's done, people have, I shouldn't say everything, but almost everything he's done, people have been like, yes, let's try that. You know, he's got a very willing audience of people who want, you know, to see what it's like with the lower bowl full on a Tuesday against Ottawa, who want the team to embrace its heritage as the Whalers. Even, you know, you don't want to go overboard with that, but pretending it didn't happen was never any good for anybody. You know, and there's a million more things he wants to do. You know, I was at the Centennial Authority meeting on Wednesday when he was talking about the scoreboard, which, you know, the scoreboard he wants is what's the industry standard now. It's what everyone's doing. It's the big horizontal, you know, board that runs parallel to the ice and has all the bells and whistles and is 4K and all that kind of stuff. You know, there's a lot of other buildings that have that. But, you know, everyone wants that. So at the Centennial Authority meeting, NCC, he starts talking about it. It was actually Don Waddell kind of talking about it, but Dundon was there, which is a hilarious moment in itself. I'll get to in a second. But Randy Woodson, the NC State Chancellor, as Waddell is talking, leans back in his chair, looks down the table to his right to where there's an NC State Athletic Department executive sitting, and his eyes are like, you know, they're like teacups. I mean, you could see the Chancellor getting excited about this because obviously it's going to be a recruiting benefit for NC State to play under one of these things. The funniest part of that meeting was Tom McCormick, the old Raleigh lawyer actually former, not old, City of Raleigh lawyer and Centennial Authority chairman, when he said that in his opening statement, so I'd like to welcome Tom Dundon, Tom doesn't know this, but he's now set the all-time record for Centennial Authority appearances by a Hurricanes owner. There are guys on that authority who never met Pete Carmona.
Wow.
So that just gives you a sense of how different things are. And Dundon, to his credit, could have left that meeting at any time. It was a long meeting by Centennial Authority standards, over 75 minutes. And he sat there the whole time. He engaged. There were times where he spoke up. You could get a sense that he understood the political winds in the room and said a couple of things to direct the discussion. It's exactly the kind of representation the Hurricanes haven't had in those meetings for a long time. And the kind of changes that everyone wants to see for this building are going to be more likely to happen with an owner who's willing to do that.
What, Luke, you mentioned a lot of the changes, and one of the changes, and maybe it's just because we're sensitive to it and we see it, it seems like there's a little bit of change even going on with the media. It seems like there's a little bit of reinvigoration within the press corps that covers this Carolina Hurricanes team. So personally for you, is this just kind of reinvigorating for you? Has there been anything on kind of the media relations sides that have potentially opened this up? What's your take? And as a media member who has covered this team for so long, are there changes that you would maybe like to see that have been somewhat stagnant for the last few years?
Well, I don't think anything's materially changed. You know, the thing about the media that people forget is we root for good stories. And what's happening here now is a terrific story. You know, the Tom Dundon buying the team is a terrific story. What he wants to do with the team is a terrific story. Moving on from the Karmanos era is a terrific story. So I think everyone is invigorated by having this a dynamic, evolving, changing story to tell. And we see that, you know, at the NNO, we see that in our metrics. People want to read about this stuff. So, in that sense, it has been invigorating for me. I mean, I've there's been a lot of sort of fire half management and nothing changes around here for a long time. And now to see actual real change. You know, some of the things Dundon is doing are things I've written about for years that needed to be done. Years. Like, entire long portions of my life I've been writing things like this. And so to now see these things happening, which as an opinion columnist, you know, you have the chance to take these stands and make these recommendations. You know, to see these things happening, it is invigorating. To see the Hurricanes and NC State getting along in a way that they typically haven't over the years. You know, we've covered a lot of NC State Hurricanes infighting over the years. And now you've got an owner and an athletic director who seem to get along pretty well. You know, we're talking about an outdoor game at Carter-Finley. We're talking about a new scoreboard. We're talking about, you know, all kinds of things that never would have been possible under the old regime. So to that extent, it is invigorating. In terms of, you know, the actual granular detail of your question, nothing has changed media relations-wise. You know, the issues this team has with media relations, which are almost all player focus to the extent that none of these guys are ever at their lockers after games, that hasn't changed. It's still a competent, you know, professional, hardworking media relations staff. You know, that personnel hasn't changed. They still do a good job. And you know, the one change I think from that sense is just having an owner who's available and accessible and you know, has things to say as opposed to Karmanos, who was never here. And when you did talk to him, you would spend, you know, the first 2 minutes complaining and before he actually said anything. So, and I'll say this for Karmanos, you know, I have not been particularly complimentary of him, and that's fine. But since, you know, the day the team, not the day after the team was actually sold, the Friday of the press conference, I ended up having about an hour long conversation with him that was very friendly and cordial and open. And for me, it was a little bit of a sense of, you know, where's this guy been the last 20 years? But I think that's just part of, you know, coaches and GMs and owners and reporters, when you're in the, you know, in the battle, so to speak, tempers get frayed and grudges get magnified. And, you know, when Peter Laviolette was finally fired, he and I had been at each other's throats forever. And Jimmy and I had our moments, but, you know, since both those guys have been gone, you know, my relationship with them is terrific, because in the end, with guys like that, there's so many hard miles, so much water under that bridge, so many shared experiences that when you get out of that day-to-day firing line, you know, what you're left with is a foundation of, you know, shared experiences and mutual respect and inside jokes and, you know, all that stuff that comes with it. And I never really thought I would get there with Karmanos because the blood was so bad, but, you know, I mean, maybe there's hope for everything.
You know, Luke, I think what we learned here is we just need to be patient.
Oh, jeez, Mike.
Come on.
That's true. Speak with a low-hanging fruit. So, Luke, as an opinion columnist, I forget if it was late last
even
week.
Even more patient,
week.
I believe, is the phrase you're looking for. Sorry.
Yeah.
We need to be even more patient.
Yeah. We like the media team we have, Luke.
you wrote about the goaltending that's going on with the Canes and how Scott Darling has not been the guy we all expected and hoped he would be this year. Why do you think it's been that whoever the Canes have brought in has been unable to unseat Cam Ward, average to as below average as Cam's performances have been over the last 5 or 6 years. Do you think it's the guys themselves that have been brought in? Do you think there's anything on how goalies are used, or just the fact that this team hasn't been that great?
No, I think it's probably more the former, although I think the other aspects of it are part of it. You know, I think to a lesser degree, for a long time in this, not now, but sort of in the pre-Slavin era, you know, this was a team that gave up a lot of really good scoring chances. And I think that hurt Cam. You know, I think that hurt some of the guys that were brought in at that time. I also think if you look narrowly at the Ron Francis era, you know, he has not established to this point that him and his staff can adequately evaluate goalies. Because if you look at Eddie Lack and Scott Darling, you know, there's nothing to suggest that these were accurate evaluations of these players and what they're capable of doing and all that. So, you know, I think there's some of that. But I do think the biggest issue and the overwhelming issue is Darling less so, but certainly with Khudobin and certainly with Lack. When you're poking around at the bottom of the barrel trying to find an apple, you know, you don't always end up with the right one. And I think some of it is just the problem this franchise has had for years is when you're not buying USDA Prime, you know, you're going to get stuff that's got some flaws in it. You know, you go back to, you know, all of those bargain basement guys Jimmy would try to pick up hoping to hit on one, the Melikars of the world. I think there's been a little of that with goaltending, you know, with the guys to me that the three guys who I think were given a legitimate chance to come here and supplant Ward were Khudobin and Lack and Darling. And to me, none of those guys, when you look at it, and maybe our view will change on this with Darling, you don't look at any of those guys and say, wow, they were really talented. I can't believe it didn't work here. You look at them and you go, you know what? That's a 30-game NHL goalie. That's the way I look at Khudobin. That's the way I look at, well, I don't even look at Lack that way. Certainly Darling was that in Chicago. And, you know, specifically related to Darling, you know, not everyone can handle that transition from backup to number one. And I think that's been half of his issue. And the other half of his issue is he has this, like, wheel of fortune set of mechanical flaws that all pop up sort of randomly in various games. Sometimes it's his gloves. Sometimes it's his positioning. Sometimes he's flopping around and scrambling. You know, the team, I think, plays completely differently in front of him. They play scared in front of him. You could see that last night with guys, you know, jumping into plays where they should be sitting back. They don't have the confidence in playing their system in front of them the way they do Ward. He doesn't handle the puck as well as Ward. Things don't move as smoothly in the back end as they do with Ward. And you put all that together and you're left with what we have. And the real tragedy of it, as you guys know, is, you know, there's a lot of people say, well, why are you giving up on him? He could still be good. And the answer is this team couldn't afford a year of Scott Darling learning how to play goal. Like, he was brought in. They picked him because he was the most ready. They had their choice. You know, they gave up a draft pick to get him. They gave him a 4-year contract. You know, there weren't any, like, financial constraints on this one. There weren't, you know, there wasn't any handicapping of this one. This was the guy they wanted, the guy other teams wanted. They picked him. They went and got him. They signed him to a long-term deal. This was their evaluation. If we get above-average NHL goaltending, there's no reason we shouldn't make the playoffs. And the guy's as bad as any goalie in the league. You know, some of that is Scott Darling's fault, but some of it isn't.
Luke, we wish we had answers. I feel like we've been talking to you for the last 5 years that we've had this podcast, and it's always come back down to the goaltending. So, last question before we let you go. Absolutely. We know there's a big game over at PNC Arena that involves NC State probably losing by 40 to Mike Bray today, coming from an NC State fan. Can this team do it? Does this team have enough horses, and does Ron Francis have the resources that he needs to potentially go make a move and get the right players on this team to make this final push with so many Metropolitan Division games in front of us? Or should we as Caniacs be looking towards next year again?
Well, I think there's two different aspects to that question. I think this team is currently constituted, and it's less to me about talent necessarily than makeup. It's not a team that handles prosperity well, as I wrote this morning. It's a team that every time it gets within a sniff of the playoffs, it collapses. I don't think this team has the will or character right now to make the playoffs. And I think that's a problem of, you know, overall talent level, the makeup of some of the guys in the room, a lack of overall leadership, despite the acquisition of Justin Williams, who I think has done well in that particular area. It's so much, only so much you can do without wearing a letter. But, you know, I don't think Justin Falk has been a good co-captain. I don't think Jeff Skinner has done what it takes to wear a letter. I think Jordan Staal has been terrific, you know, regardless of his performance on the ice or any of that stuff. I think from a leadership perspective, he's done what was expected of him, and that's great. But I don't think this team is currently constituted is going to make the playoffs, certainly with the goaltending situation the way it is. The second part of that question is, you know, would Francis make a move? I think if Francis went to Dundon and said, we can do X, Y, Z, at this point, Dundon's almost honor-bound to say yes, because that's the rhetoric that he's been saying over and over again. I don't think Ron Francis is going to go to him with that move. I don't think Ron Francis likes making trades. It's been 4 years now. He hasn't made a single player-for-player trade. He wants to build through the draft. He wants to build for the long term. He wants to do it slowly and patiently. I think that time ran out last summer. That's just my opinion. I think he's too committed. I don't know if committed is the right word. I just don't think it's his style to make trades for whatever reason. And I don't expect him to make any trades at this point. I you know, people are like, should they do this? Should they do that? And at this point, I'm like, what's the point? He's not going to do it anyway. You know, the Islanders could offer them Tavares for whatever at this point, and Ronnie would say, I don't want to give draft picks. You know, it's just it's almost pointless in that respect to me at this point, because he just has not shown any willingness to shake this team up. And at that point, you know, we're the idiots for thinking something's going to happen.
Well, I think the one thing we can take away out of this entire interview, Luke, is that you have confirmed what everybody has thought for years. We're idiots. So for that,
I don't know. I don't know about that. But, you know, my point is, sometimes people are who you show you they are. And I think in a lot of cases with this team, with these players and with the GM, it is what it is at this point. There's no hidden secrets around the corner. You know, some of these guys aren't winners, and the GM doesn't like to make moves. So hoping that these guys are going to turn into winners and hoping that the GM is going to start making a bunch of trades, you know, it's just not going to be good. You know, it's not going to be mentally healthy for anyone. It's a reality, I think, at this point we all have to accept.
It's a tough reality, but Luke, you always bring doses of reality to us. Folks, if you need Luke more of Luke's reality, he is at Luke Dukak over on Twitter. Maybe more importantly, how this last couple of weeks has reminded us how important it is to support your traditional media and subscribe to the e-edition and the paper edition of your local News and Observer, because Luke and Chip have been doing a great job covering this team for many, many years, and it's been great to see everything that you guys have been pumping out over the last couple of weeks with the new ownership. So, Luke, thank you for all you do. Thank you for all you've done for years covering the team, but more importantly, thanks for taking a few minutes out today to chat with us two yahoos here on Cheaters Never Win. We appreciate it, sir.
No, I appreciate all that you said, but I'm happy to do this anytime, and I think, you know, obviously you guys care very deeply about this team and where it's headed, and you know, I think I certainly from a journalist perspective that have a tremendous deal of respect for, you know, just the level of effort and the intensity and interest and resources you guys have put into this team over the years, and that's good for everybody.
Excellent. Luke, I would say go Wolfpack, but I know you are completely indifferent, so go local sports team.
Go good story.
Yes, go good stories.
Go good stories. Always rooting for that.
We'll talk to you soon, Luke. Take care, buddy. You know, Luke Dukak takes a lot of heat from a lot of Caniacs because he is hypercritical some days and has to do what he needs to do to sell papers, but Luke Dukak knows this club maybe better than just about anybody because he has seen everything.
Mm-hmm. I would completely agree with
that.
The
inside and the outside. So we thank him for that. And again, my kudos to the News and Observer guys who have been doing a phenomenal job of covering over the last couple of weeks. It seems like whether Luke announced they like a good story, they've been putting out good stories.
The other thing is too, and you'll hear this from Luke, you'll hear this from, I mean, more so from Joe Obias when we talk to him about why is there not as much hockey coverage on the radio. They are going to deliver what you let them know you want. So if you want more Canes coverage on the radio, tune in. If you want more Canes coverage on local media, click on their stories. They will do more if you give them incentive to do it, because that's truly the purpose of media, is to deliver an audience.
And well, we, not being, I guess, non-traditional media, we have things we have to deliver on too, Derek. One of those things we have to deliver on is cheat mail, cheat mail. Gotta go get that cheat mail.
So, Mike, can I start off strong with the cheat mail?
Oh, bring it, baby.
So we got two F, Marry, Kill questions.
Oh, we're starting off F, Marry, Kill.
I told you, I'm coming in hot, Mike.
Coming in hot.
Two F, Marry, Kill questions that had corndog nuggets and a new scoreboard as an option. So while Dan McLaughlin came in at 441 with this, at 434, I'm going to go with who came in chronologically first. Our buddy Carl Kikas, K2TheRL, came in with F, Marry, Kill, Mike, stadium upgrades, cheap concessions, huge jumbotron, corndog nuggets.
Okay. So, I want to make sure I got these right.
Yes.
Corn dog nuggets.
That is an option.
Lower / cheap concession prices.
Mm-hmm.
And giant jumbotron.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to start off where I think is the most obvious.
Uh-huh.
And I am going dirty and nasty with that new jumbotron.
Okay.
I am effing that new jumbotron, and here's why.
Okay.
It's going to be really hot to start. I mean, it's going to just be like, oh, baby, you look so good. Oh, God, I can't.
Oh, you're so wide.
Oh, my God. Just the clearness of what you've got. But then I know it's going to fade with time. I know there's going to be different scoreboards out there that I'm going to be interested in.
Right.
I may have to, you know. There's always that one down there in Jerry Land. Something's going to happen.
Scoreboards are a lust issue. I'll give you that.
Okay, so there's that. I am going to shock the world, and I'm going to marry cheap concessions.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being is I have to. This is something I get to have forever. I can buy corn dog nuggets at home and cook them in my stove for away games, and I can afford to buy corn dog nuggets and keep the electricity on at home by having to be able to get two hot dogs and a beer for $11 versus two hot dogs and a beer for $23. So I hate to say it.
I hate to hear it, Mike. And
killing the nuggets.
I hate even more that I agree with you on all three, because much as we love corn dog nuggets, you're exactly right. I mean, there's something to be said for reasonably priced hot dogs.
I know, right? So, Derek, let's move on here. Honest thoughts on the playoff chances for this team as is. That comes in from our one of our co-captains, Will Looper. He is at W Looper, LUPER.
As is?
As is. No changes.
I think it's truly about a 50-50 prospect. I think it's going to come down to us, the Flyers, and the Isle. I mean, hell, the Devils could even roll back, and it's going to be...
Oh, the Devils are rolling. The Devils are not making the playoffs.
It's two of these four teams, because the Devils are... Okay, let's say it now, Mike. The Devils aren't going to make it.
No.
The Rangers aren't going to make it.
No.
So it's two out of us, Philly, the Islanders then, right?
Right.
Why not us?
Why not us? I think...
The Flyers have goaltending issue if Mason's going to be hurt.
I think as is this, I don't know if there's a lot of big upgrades that are out there, though. I mean, we need a 1C upgrade.
And nobody's parting with that at this time of year.
Right. I mean, and we could go get a 2C as an upgrade. I mean, I don't know. We were talking about this last night as we were watching Detroit, knowing that Detroit's going to be a seller. If we could pick one player off their team, we would want. And there were kind of different choices, but I think one that I think brought forth the most conversation was maybe the most interesting was Franz Nielsen. Franz Nielsen would kind of be Jordan Staal 2.0, but that allows you to not have to overslot Victor Rask. And we've seen how well Franz Nielsen plays in that two spot. And you think when you've got the TSA line, when Turbo and Aho are clicking, that really is a first line. And I like that first line. You throw Nielsen out there, with a couple of scores, and like he did on the aisle, I think that could be there. So somebody like Franz Nielsen, I think, could potentially bump up this team. But as is, I'm going to call it, this team has a 58% chance of making the playoffs, and I like it.
Franz Nielsen, 33 years old, right, under contract for four more seasons after this one at 5.25.
Derek, something's going to change, right?
Right.
But I mean, we're not even close to the cap. I know we've got to go out there, and we've got some guys we've got to sign.
Franz has 17 points this year.
Really?
He has 11 goals and 6 helpers in 50 games.
Yeah, but he's also playing for one of the worst teams in the league who beat us 4-1 last night because Darren Helm's a freaking world beater.
All right, Mike. This is from Ed at That Edmund Guy.
That Edmund Guy. Hey, Ed.
If you were to compare the Slavin Pesci shutdown pairing to any former or current professional tag team, who would you compare them to?
Ooh, I like that question.
I do too. That's why I asked it. Thank you, Ed.
I'm going to go current.
Okay.
I'm going to go with one of my favorite current tag teams.
I think
teams.
I know where you're going.
No flips, just fists. Mm-hmm. They are the Revival. They are, again, I mean, they're kind of gritty. They've got a little bit of flash when they need it, but for the most part, they're there. They're there just about every night. Some nights they're going to get crapped on, but for the most part, they're really, really good, and you want them to be really, really good.
I'm going similar but different, Mike.
Okay.
I'm going with the team that inspired the Revival.
Oh, yeah. You're going way back.
I'm going Tully and Arn, sometimes known as the Brainbusters when they were in the WWF. But, yeah, Slavin is absolutely the Arn of this group. He's just good at everything. I would say Slavin's poke check is the equivalent of Arn's spinebuster.
I like it.
And he always is just a dad. Like, Arn Anderson has always had just dad bod and dad strength, even at his peak. I'm not saying that Pesci's going to have a substance abuse problem. I hope he doesn't.
Woof.
But he's the Tully of the group.
I mean, has there ever been a successful Randy Orton tag team that we could put
Pesci? He was tag team champions with Edge for a while.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean,
RKO.
Oh, that's right. And then I was trying to think of, you know, when they were Revolution and you did him and Big Dave.
No, Dave was with Natch.
Yeah. Woo!
Yeah. We're going down the rabbit hole, Mike. Hit me with another one.
Let's go over here to this one from Kemp Allen, at Kemp Allen over on the Twitters. And this is kind of interesting. I don't know if we can get all five, but Derek, who are your top five fictional hockey players of all time?
Ooh. I forget his name, but it was the guy that Stifler played in Goon.
Okay.
He's got to be up there. The Hanson brothers are all part of the top five because they want to listen to the effing song. Do not admonish them during the anthem.
No,
they are listening to the effing song. And God, who's a fifth one that I could put in there? Fat guy from NES Ice Hockey.
Derek, that's way wrong.
Oh, all right.
You have obviously forgotten Goldberg.
Hmm?
Greatest goaltender of all
time.
Oh,
yes. Okay, Mighty Ducks.
Goldberg.
I've never been a huge Mighty Ducks fan.
God, you're killing me, Derek.
Sorry.
You're right. The guy, and again, it's completely escaping me.
Doug Glatt.
Thank you. Glatt. The guy that Glatt beat the hell out of.
Rob Ray?
Well, no. The guy Liam plays.
No, it wasn't Liam. It was Liev Schreiber.
Yes, thank you. Again, oh God, Pat and Tom are gonna have so much fun with get the stuff on the podcast right. I like the Hansons. I like everybody in Slapshot. I like the French Canadian goalie. And again, it's not even noon, and we've already been drinking beer because it's a podcast, so we're not quite in the fictionals. But great question. Sorry, we had horrible answers.
I also liked were they Russian or French Canadian in
Miracle, by the way?
No.
Okay.
I forget if they were French-Canadian or Russian, but the brothers in Goon who did inappropriate things to a goaltender's helmet.
Yes. Yeah, those guys are good. Derek, do you have anything else before we tell these great people about that beautiful bottle mix beer we've been drinking?
You know, this is an interesting one.
Okay.
From Matt Peterson, at Matt Peterson PE. If you could only keep one for next season, who would it be, Jeff Skinner or Bill Peters?
Oh, Jeff Skinner. It's not hard.
Okay.
I think a different coach could get more out of Jeff Skinner. I think Bill Peters is a fine coach, but I am quickly losing faith in Bill Peters.
You're not wrong.
So if we do not make the playoffs next year or this year, I look forward to seeing what the next coach of the Carolina Hurricanes can bring. But that's a discussion for another future podcast. We still have a discussion on this podcast about that horrible smelling beer that you have.
Oh,
in your hand.
See, that's where you're wrong, Mike.
It doesn't smell like coffee or chocolate or cocoa nibs. You can see light through it. Therefore, it fails.
No, this beer is tart and wonderful. It is Distill's Wild Sour Series Syncopathic Dry Hop Sour Ale. So I went and I talked with Dustin up at Bottle Mix on Creedmoor Road in North Raleigh. You know it. You go there for your beer and your wine. And if you're not, start going there for your beer and your wine. They'll take phenomenal care of you with hundreds of choices for both. So seriously, go there. Talked to Dustin. I said, hey, want to do something a little different this week because we've done a couple IPAs lately. Before that, we did a few dark, heavy, roasty beers. So let's mix something up. And he's like, I got just a thing for you. Do you like sours? And I said, yeah, Dustin, the Pope hasn't renounced Catholicism. I'm pretty sure I would have seen that news. I like sours. What you got? And he handed me this green and white can from a brewer in Normal, Illinois distill. I've had their other sours. I don't recall if I'd had Syncopathic before, but I like things that are dry hopped. I like sours. And the description that said it's refreshingly tart, sour ale with citrusy, fruity, and floral dry hops in concert with pale ales that normally, but they give it aromas of grapefruit, orange, lemon, tangerine, pineapple, and hints of pine, giving way to a biscuity, crackery malt backbeat. So it's bitter and dry at the end. I don't know that I could pick out all those flavors. In fact, I know that I couldn't, because the first sip of this beer, first of all, do not drink this beer out of a can. It is way too sour, way too tart to not be poured into a glass. That way the aromas don't just like shoot directly up your nose, and the flavor on this beer, you want it to spread out across your palate and not just be like laser focused. So the first sip and the first sniff that you give it, it's pretty sour. It's pretty tart. It's a little aggressive, and you might say, I don't know if I want another sip of that unless you're a huge sour head. But take another sip. Because the more you taste this beer, the more you can start to pick out some of those notes. Yes, you'll get the grapefruit, you'll get the citrus, but then you start to get that little dry, hoppy finish that's just the right amount of bitter. You can start to get the pine. You start to taste the orange in contrast to the grapefruit. And it just, each sip gets more and more enjoyable. It's stupid refreshing. I know it's only 35 degrees outside today, but like tomorrow on a rainy day or if it gets a little muggy, these beers are phenomenal. Bottle Mix has a good stock of them. It's a couple bucks or so a can. Highly recommend it. Pour it into a glass. Enjoy it. If you don't love sours, this may be an aggressive start, but maybe you find out you love sours this way. And if you're a fan of sours, seriously, go pick this up. It is tart. It is delicious. Tell Dustin that you heard about this beer on the 328 podcast. You want to check it out. They will have a little sign in front of it that says it's the Section 328 Beer of the Week. And, you know, fill out the six pack with five other beers that you haven't tried. Find some new favorites. And then go over and talk to Jack and let him know what you're having for the Super Bowl or another party. And he'll get you a nice bottle of wine, too.
Yeah, I mean, because if you're rooting for the Patriots, you enjoy wine.
I don't know. Maybe you're a fan of Gronk and you just want a big, dumb beer.
Big, dumb beer.
Yeah.
That would be our first brewed beer.
Big, dumb beer.
Section 320, its very own big, dumb beer. Guys, thank you guys for listening. Thanks to Bottle Mix, as always, for continuing to support and sponsor this podcast. The live Section 328 podcast that never made it out there to the airwaves, it was a bit corrupted. So I do have an audio file that has about half of it that's really not fit for public consumption, but I'm still going to throw it out there for the Patreon folks because it is, again, the audio is not great, but I do want to kind of throw it out there, and it is not a complete podcast because equipment failed.
Things happened.
But the good news is if the Carolina Hurricanes do make the playoffs, we can pretty much guarantee that there will be another live Section 328 podcast happening out at Bottle Mix sometime between now and when those playoffs start. And if the playoffs don't start, maybe we just do something right there at the end of the season as everybody's kind of checking out. But it was a great success. So thank you to everybody who came out again. We had a blast doing it. We had a blast talking to Brett and Luke this morning. We hope you had a blast listening.
Absolutely. I didn't know if you wanted to share the good work that happened at that podcast.
You know what, Derek? That is a good point. So at that podcast, John Chase, who is head of the Canes Community Foundation, spoke and told us a lot about the foundation and things that are going on inside the organization. Bottle Mix had committed to matching all of the tips that day and donating all of those tips plus the match to the Kids and Community Foundation. Plus, we had a few raffles that day and folks made some donations. We are very happy to announce that between Section 328's efforts, Bottle Mix's efforts, and a little bit of matching on both of our parts,
and everyone's generosity and that was
everybody's
there.
Generosity who was there, all of our raffle winners and folks who just said, hey, look, I don't need raffle tickets, but here's $20 for the foundation. We this week are making $1,000 donation combined between Section 328.com and bottle mix. So that's going out to the kids. So again, thank you guys for continuing to support us, because we do our best to try to pay it back to the community at least a little bit. And we hope that we will see you out at the first time Canes Bash, I believe, that's coming up in March. I know a few of us will be out there for that as well. So thanks as always for listening. We're on Patreon if you want to continue to support us, patreon.com/section328, all sorts of goodies out there, including you can get yourself multiple t-shirts a year for free.
Absolutely.
By supporting us. You can also go just click on the buy on Amazon button off of section 328. And then that way you can, support us by buying stuff on Amazon, but don't even really have to directly give us any of your money. We just get a couple of pennies in the coffer, which is nice. Twitter, Instagram, all sorts of other social media places. Best place to find us for at least the next couple of weeks, though, is to climb the stairs, find your way over to section 328, find your way to OC, find the formerly fat guy, the tall, lanky guy. One of us probably has a beer in the hand. The other one probably what got hammered drinking whiskey in the parking lot. But come say hi, because we love seeing you guys, chat with you guys, and really just kind of talking hockey. So hopefully we'll see a bunch of you guys out there tomorrow as the Carolina Hurricanes take on the San Jose Sharks and get back on our winning ways, because God knows we need it.
That we do.
All right. Until then, my name is Mike.
This is Derek.
We're out of here.
Yeah.